Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Work-Life Equation, a Bright Horizons podcast, the only podcast that features candid conversations, stories, and strategies from corporate leaders, public figures, and everyday people who are putting the pieces together to make life work. I am one of your hosts, Priya Krishnan.
And I am one of your hosts, Christine Michelle Carter.
How have you been, Christine?
I've been really good. It's a great week. I am about to celebrate a birthday, so I'm having a fabulous month so far.
Are you a Gemini too?
I am. Absolutely am.
We're twinning on many counts. I'm a Gemini too. So today's guests started a small company 37 years ago in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which turned into one of the largest providers of employer-sponsored childcare. An inspiration to many like me to start up and create these supports across the globe, our very own Bright Horizons. I actually thought before we jump into having this incredible conversation that I'm looking forward to, Christine, I thought we could have our here we go conversation. This is really Christine and our weekly conversation when we are on the podcast. Since none of us really have dinner anymore at a table, this is a moment in time where we say, here we go. And this is what our kids would ask us. But I was talking to the boys about the end of school. They finished up school last week. And everyone talks about the start of school, but they were really tired and exhausted. And it just felt like saying, take the time, decompress during the 2.5 months, find purpose and meaning, don't keep gaming. Was something that I was chatting with them. You raised 3 children. How has that been? And have you had these discussions with them?
Oh, my gosh. Well, our children now are fully grown. And, every chapter of their childhood and growing up is so different. But keeping that conversation going, and particularly over breakfast, over dinner, driving in the car, just, trying to communicate in whatever way, even when they're in the tough, adolescent and teenage years.
And Roger, did you have these conversations? What was it like when school ended?
Well, I think summer is always exciting for kids to be out of school and to have some free time and not feel so much pressure. And we loved it. There was a little day camp nearby that our kids all went to, where they would learn to swim and play soccer and stuff like that. And it was walkable. We could walk there with them. So it was very cozy. And I just remember we would do a lot more reading because it was more leisurely. So we would tear into books with them. So beautiful memories of especially summer.
Yeah, we tried to slow it down in summer because the school year just seemed to go, was so intense, went so fast, so many activities. So I remember when Lucas was 11 and he was so into physics and calculus, we said the job of an 11-year-old is to play and have fun. So that's what we tried to do with our summers.
And Christine, how is that going with your 11-year-old?
Oh my goodness. So Maya is very much ready for summer break. I think that she's looking forward to relaxing because she does do so much during the school year with violin and soccer and what have you. I'm hoping that she will just slow down. I'm hoping that I get to slow down and not travel to and from every activity known to man. So
yeah, I think we just need to let our kids learn to slow down and decompress. That was really the conversation that I was having with them, is don't pack it in so much that you lose this really precious time, because as adults, we just don't get it.
Yeah. And we know through Bright Horizons how important play is, and just to encourage our kids to relax and play in the summer.
We're so excited to have both of you here. Like I said, I've watched what you've done with Bright Horizons. It's inspired me halfway across the globe to do something similar in India. You both have such incredible backgrounds, all of which led to Bright Horizons being born. What struck you most about your humanitarian work and the experience that through entrepreneurship and Save the Children came about for you to start up Bright Horizons?
Well, our work overseas, we spent many years in Africa and Southeast Asia running refugee programs and famine relief programs. And most of our work was focused on young children since they're the most affected by war and famine and dislocation. And our last stint turned out to be very entrepreneurial, where we were asked by Save the Children to go over to the Sudan and create and launch and build a national program. And we were bit by the entrepreneurial bug while we're over there.
The one thing I remember so vividly is how we were in a refugee camp with Cambodian refugees who had been totally dislocated by the whole Khmer Rouge era. There was, malnutrition, all sorts of illness, but kids knew how to play. And no matter where we've been, that the beauty of childhood sort of shines through. And part of what we wanted to do in those programs was give children a chance to be children. And in our own lives as parents, we've tried to do the same. I think maybe my parents' generation was a little too laissez-faire, but sometimes I think our parents' generation was a little too hands-on, like sometimes trying to micromanage every detail for their children. So we tried to find that healthy balance of being successful at our work, but not so focused on our work that we weren't good parents, but not so focused on our children that we didn't give them room to breathe and sort of give them some. I mean, literally, there'd be these kids in this Cambodian refugee camp making all these toys out of found materials. They didn't need store-bought toys. They didn't need computers. They didn't need video games. They, if you give them the freedom, children will find a way to grow and have fun.
Yeah, and I think what we also learned, when we're working, particularly in the Sudan, which was suffering from a major famine, and then all the trauma, the Eritrean refugees escaping the war, that and we're working with young children, we realized children intervening in those early years can have just such an important foundational impact on a person's life. And so when we returned to the States, we both wanted to work together, to start another organization together. We realized we had different but complementary skills, that we loved working together. We loved the opportunity to start with a vision and create an organization around it. And we wanted to find something that would have a societal impact. And having worked so much with young children overseas and seeing how, they are resilient. If you can intervene early, you can really help their trajectory. So we started looking in the children's field, and it became pretty evident pretty quickly that the needs for high quality childcare here were pretty enormous.
Right.
But one of the things we said early on is it would be terrible to be successful in creating a great childcare organization and be unsuccessful as parents of our own children. So if we're going to do this, we have to find a way to be the kind of entrepreneurs who don't lose sight of everything else. We got to have some boundaries. We've got to organize our lives in such a way that our children always know they come first. And we tried to do that. Now, I'm sure they would have voluminous critiques of our parenting. But in general, I think at this phase, at 26, 31, 33, I think they now recognize that we did a pretty good job.
It's and I'd love to pick your brains on the balance, because it is an interesting nuance as, as you're growing a company.
And so you started Bright Horizons in 1986, and childcare back then looked very different than it does today. But you were quoted saying that back then, the largest company in the industry was trying to emulate the fast food business. Can you explain a little bit more about what childcare looked like in 1986 and how that caused you to want to change the industry to be more empathetic?
Sure. We did a big survey when we were first developing the idea of what childcare looked like nationwide, and discovered that most childcare that existed in the US was really poor to mediocre quality. And that's not because child care directors wanted it that way. It's because the unit economics are so difficult that in order to make it affordable for parents, you put downward pressure on tuition, which of course then puts downward pressure on salaries and labor. So as we thought, this is a national tragedy. We're also looking at the numbers of mothers with young children entering the workforce, and it was just increasing at significant rates. So most of our nation's children were in some form of childcare, and much of that was inadequate. And so when we looked at why is it inadequate, it's because the unit economics don't work unless you have some kind of subsidy. So that's where the idea of worksite childcare arose.
And we did discover some magnificent childcare centers in the area that we visited and taught to. But many of them were kind of old school, so their hours were very limited. So if you were a working parent, it didn't really help you that much. So they were very committed to more of the kind of old preschool model, but they had excellent teachers and excellent curriculum. And then the people who were serving the working parents seemed, the reason we used the term the trying to be like the fast food industry, it was nice looking facilities, very low paid teachers, not always necessarily even meeting ratio requirements. And it just felt like these are our children. What are we doing here? We need to do something better than this. And so the thought that maybe we could find an employer or another source of support so that we could pay teachers better, have better benefits, have great ratios and really good curriculum, do the training and support. And so that was the basic idea. And I do think our timing was good. We might have been 5 years too early.
Yeah, it was a big struggle in the
But
beginning.
the fact that we inspired someone in India to emulate the model and other people in the US, I think our view was always bigger than just Bright Horizons. We wanted to be an inspiration to people that we can do better. We can have better childcare.
But it was a, we were a bit before. It was an early idea. I mean, there was almost no such thing as worksite childcare when we started. And, you know, we struggled for years to get it all. I mean, now it seems like Bright Horizons is so established, but it was such an unknown idea that, you know, we'd go to corporations and pitch the idea. And, you know, CEOs would say, why would we want children around our campus? It was just, you know, seemed crazy to them until they lost some very valuable. Women who had to leave the workplace because they couldn't find good childcare. And then they realized, well, this is a business issue, not just being a nice employer.
Right. No, and as a mom, I can say this, that, you know, quality comes first and access, how close is it either to home or work. And then after that, affordability is an important criteria. And I think employers really play a big role in providing that affordability. But when you started this, and even though it was difficult for the first 5 years, how did you persist and how do you stay the course? I think there is a lesson for young entrepreneurs on just staying the course for a period of time because we live in a world of instant gratification. So.
We're stubborn. I think we're really stubborn. And we had done a lot of research. We knew it made
Yeah.
sense.
I also think we were not, and I think this is true for most entrepreneurs, commercial success was less important to us. We had a bigger idea of some change we wanted to bring about in the world, which made us stubborn because we really believed this was important. So I think had we thought this is just a business idea, we might have said, this may not work. But if you, much like the work we'd done in refugee camps, you know, it was not driven by commercial success. It was driven by trying to help these people who had been through so much rebuild their lives. So this felt like our application of those same values to a big domestic issue that was affecting hundreds of thousands of people.
And you know, it really took, at first, we tried to convince employers that, you know, do this, you'd be a great employer to do this. And that didn't really sell. But it once we were able to accumulate data to make the business case that it would help them recruit and retain employees, that it would help productivity, reduce turnover. And a really wonderful unforeseen benefit is that if the child care center is at the site where the husband works, then it's the dad who brings the child in and takes them home. You know, at first we started developing our parent activities focused on the moms, but as we started charting who's picking up and dropping off the children, half of the drop-offs were by the dad. So well, that ended up being a nice benefit of engaging fathers more intimately in their children's early years.
Right.
That's the way we did it. Linda would go in early. I would get the children ready, take them to Bright Horizons. She would leave on the early side. And so we had sort of staggered shifts and take the children home, and I'd get another 2 or 3 hours in, and we'd try to avoid rush hour. So we had a whole system that let us both be very engaged in our kids' lives. And there was a great moment where we had operable windows, which is not always true in office buildings, and I could make paper airplanes and fly them down to the playground where our children were. So not only could I see them, I could interact with them. And I just think, how great is that to not have your children, you know, 10 miles away, but to be right there with them.
Yeah. And Roger, what was your experience like building a family while building a company?
A little crazy. There were times we thought maybe we should have done one of these first and then the other one next, because it was a lot. On the other hand, I always felt like we had enormous empathy for parents of young children because we were parents of young children. We were trying to have a successful career and professional life and yet be good parents. So everything that the enrolled families at Bright Horizons were going through, we were going through. So we had, I think, deep empathy. And honestly, if things weren't going well at our own center, it gave us insights into things we needed to do to make the organization better. So we said, if we ever get cynical and think, well, it's good enough, but not good enough for us, we should stop. This has to be good enough, not only for other people's children, but for our own children.
Yeah. And you know, how wonderful, Christine, to be in a job where you're children are valued. You know, we'd go visit corporate sites and our clients, and typically the executive would sit behind his desk and the family photos were facing out, you know, to kind of showcase their family. Whereas at Bright Horizons, family was everywhere. You know, kids' family photos were all around. And for us to, actually, we learned how to be parents through the caretakers, the teachers in our centers. We didn't have family around. First-time parents is, you know, really scary, as we all know. And it's through our early teachers that we really learned parenting skills. And, you know, how fortunate we are, all of us working at Bright Horizons, where our children can really feel part of what we do. And, you know, we've kind of... When people ask me, oh, when did such and such happen in Bright Horizons, I always remember key things that happened in Bright Horizons at the dates of where my children were at the time. So, you know, it was very mixed. You know, our family and our work were very mixed.
And how lucky is it that, you know, it's I'm smiling because it's exactly the same. It was, oh, the day, you know, Adi did this or Arjun did that. But, you know, you've been quoted in the Harvard Business Review as saying, and I'm looking here just to make sure I got this right, with James Ruse, who said, Linda, your passions don't have to be extracurricular. You know, they can be central to your life. Unleash them, and you will have other people unleash theirs. That's really powerful advice. What about that advice struck you the most, and how do you think people can recognize that in the services that Bright Horizons provides?
Well, I think anyone who joins Bright Horizons is doing just that, that they're joining Bright Horizons because they're passionate about the work that our company does. So I think this is a very passion-led, mission-led organization. And but I often, you know, I've mentored many young people starting out in their professional lives. You don't always have the opportunity at every phase to be doing your passion work. And, you know, when I graduated from graduate school, I had debts to pay. And so I worked in a firm that really wasn't my passion, but it paid well, and I learned some other skills. So I don't want people to bemoan the fact if they're not always in their passion job, that think of your life in chapters, that, you know, every phase can bring you something. But if you keep your North Star, what your passions are, you'll hopefully you'll get there.
I think that's a good piece of advice. That was one of the questions I was going to ask you, is just like James gave you advice, what piece of advice would you give to our listeners? But I think that it's very important for listeners to understand that, you know, you won't always be in your dream role. So that, beautifully put, beautifully put. Mm-hmm. What has it been like seeing Bright Horizons evolve over the past 37 years?
Kind of mind blowing.
we're so proud. And we believe that Bright Horizons has made a significant difference, not only for the families that it serves, not only as a role model for other organizations, but the program that you all put in place after we were here, which is free college education for any teacher from day one. I mean, that is an extraordinary transformation of this field, where a lot of people come from backgrounds where they can't afford a college education. They have to work, but that limits their career opportunity. So to give them that training not only helps the teacher, but it makes the programs better. So we're very proud, and we're also looking back on our own children, we feel like we did give them a good childhood, and we feel like they are healthy people who know what they care about. And I think, you know, good childcare helps you do that. The advice I would give to parents of young children is, you know, it's so easy to worry about everything and to think every moment needs to be to maximize your child's growth and potential. We joke that we were tiger parents with our first daughter.
Poor thing.
We both grew up in little tiny towns, Linda in upstate New York and me in Georgia. And we didn't have things like ballet lessons and French and, you know, all this stuff. And we wanted all that for our kids. And then at some point we thought, you know, I think we're overdoing this a little bit. I think we need to let all of our children have a rich, full childhood that has some of that enrichment, but also has time for relaxing and reading. And,
right.
and there are times when it's better for them to not have our full attention. It's better for them to sometimes go off and make up a play or dress up or something that we're not orchestrating.
But Christine, you know, asking about how does it feel now 37 years later? Well, when we were cooking up the idea of Bright Horizons, you know, we were young and idealistic, and we wanted to make an impact on this field. As we said, we felt it was a national tragedy that our nation's children were largely in suboptimal care. So we had idealist, audacious dreams. I tell you, it's just, we are so proud of Bright Horizons. I can't tell you how proud we are. And it even feels with each generation of new leaders who have come in, it just seems like the organization gets better and better. And yet it still feels to us like a small organization. You know, when we walked into the office this morning, we just saw so many people we love and are friends with. It still feels very family-like. And that's what we hope will always stay. But I tell you, the pride we feel, you know, this organization has such amazing people and leaders that we've become such good friends with over the decades. And, you know, get together for dinners and we come back any chance we get to the office. We're bursting with pride, Christine.
That's wonderful. And you know, I think as an entrepreneur as well, the dream of having it's like a child. I think I always thought of Clay as my third child. Like, I have two boys, and the notion of your children outliving you and performing better than you is really, really critical. Yes.
I feel like the comfortable grandma that comes back in and just loves what everyone's doing.
But the you talk about, you know, building cathedrals, and I think for young entrepreneurs, this is a really critical, it's critical advice, because things don't happen overnight, and something as important as childcare, which is formative years. You know, I think of children as the demographic dividend of a country. It is, you know, if we invest right in children, they go on to become good citizens and take care of the country and the world. What advice would you give to entrepreneurs, and what advice would you give to parents? Because both sets, I think entrepreneurs rush through these journeys, mm-hmm. and parents don't sometimes realize the importance of 0 to 6 or 0 to 5 or 0 to 3.
Well, for entrepreneurs, I would say there's an ethos that says you're supposed to sacrifice your whole being to the startup. And I think that's unhealthy. I don't think it's required. I actually think you might be more successful if you maintain some boundaries. And Linda and I early on agreed that we would neither one of us would be away more than 4 nights a month.
And never at the same time. So there's always a parent at home.
Which was hard, because there were a lot of times. There's 1 month a year I always violated the rule, which was the month of the NAYC conference. But that was only 5 days, and my parents were there during that. So, you know, there were times I felt like I should be out doing, you know, visiting programs or going to presentations, but it all worked out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what I often advise entrepreneurs is do your homework and really know your industry, your niche, your approach. And then once you've done your homework, you've got to believe in what you're doing with Missionary Zeal, because you're going, as you know, Priya, starting an organization, you're going to, no matter what homework you do, you're going to hit unforeseen roadblocks. And if you don't have, you know, the commitment, the stubbornness, if you're convinced that this is truly a great idea, and to keep nimble, you know, we had a certain model of only when we started of just pitching to corporate CEOs. They weren't at all interested, and we pivoted and started talking to real estate developers who are just trying to fill up their office park. So being nimble. So I think sort of do your homework, be committed, have missionary zeal, and be nimble is what I would say.
And to parents who need to focus on these important years, I think, you know, how you speak about the children and them coming first, before, and you both were doing really incredible work and together. What advice would you give parents?
Well, you know, I think what Roger said is parents, we worried all the time with is our child not hitting that milestone at the right time? And, you know, we look back now and just said, you know, we worried way too much. So I think to try to enjoy the journey more, but to keep, for working parents, I think your number one priority has to be your children, your family. But, you know, it's always got to be a balance. So it's not going to be always in every instance the child comes first. But if you always hold that top of mind, I think it'll help you from keeping, you know, working too much or having the work run away from you.
I think the advice I would give parents is just try to enjoy your children's presence, you know, as opposed to trying to mold them into the person you think they should be. Try to love them, enjoy them, take interest in them, be curious about them, be open about who you are, and give them the room to grow, because they will do that naturally. You know, children have been growing up for several millennia, and it's kind of programmed into us to do so. So I think sometimes parents, especially of this generation, can feel like they're supposed to be in constant touch or constant awareness of what their children are doing. And sometimes Some of my best memories as a child were when my parents were not paying attention.
You know, my mother, who is very wise, had five children, would always say, you know, Linda, children are like the weather. Wait a couple of days and it'll change. So not to, every child goes through their ups and downs and challenging periods, and know that this too shall pass. So I think that's easy to say, and maybe hard to feel, but a good thing to do.
Those were amazing points. Children are like the weather. Wait a couple of days and it'll pass. And some of my best memories are when my parents weren't paying attention. Those are my takeaways.
You know, well, Maya's 11. Is that right,
Christine? Yes, she is.
Well, enjoy the next 3 years.
Or enjoy the next year or two. But even during the adolescent and teenage years, where you could think, oh my God, what's happened to my child? You know, I don't recognize this person. You know, to try to know this too shall pass. Yeah. This is a chapter. They'll come around and be normal human beings again. And also, you know, I've come to appreciate those adolescent and teenage years as such passionate years. I mean, those are the times when your children, they see everything in black and white. It's everything is good or bad, and they're passionate about their views. And that, you know, as you grow older, you see things in shades of gray. So to kind of appreciate that passion for what it is and know that you'll get through it.
And there's a lot of attention right now on childcare in our country. And I think more folks are aware of the importance of childcare and early childhood education. What are your hopes for the future of the industry?
Well, my number one hope would be that we show the respect to teachers that they deserve. I still feel like it's a profession where teachers, especially early childhood educators, don't get the respect from society. They're probably the most important people doing the most important job we have. And I feel like one of the things Linda and I set out to do was, at least within Bright Horizons, to make sure teachers know how much we value them and respect them. Part of that would be better compensation. I mean, even as well as organizations like Bright Horizons do, I think we all wish we could do better. So, and then I think education and training and growth and other opportunities, career growth. One of the benefits that we didn't fully understand when we started Bright Horizons is that someone could start as an assistant teacher and someday be a regional manager and have a career within the organization. And if their partner gets relocated to Seattle, go have a job in Seattle. So there are a lot of benefits like that. I think that I'd love to see the field become more professional and create more opportunity for the people who do the work.
You know, when we started Bright Horizons, and I'm sure Priya, being in the early childhood field and your company as well, you know, the sector did not really have societal respect to the extent that it deserved. You know, often thought of as a babysitting service. And it was called daycare, not childcare. And, you know, my hope, and, you know, I think it's changed a lot since the pandemic, don't you think? Where suddenly society woke up and saw, you know, people can't work unless their children are cared for. And it became more evident how the needs of working parents to have their children in great childcare. So, you know, I think the sector needs much more public funding. Every other industrialized country has that massive more public funding for childcare. And I think we need that, because for folks who work for a company that has a Bright Horizon Center, they'll get great childcare, great quality childcare. But then what about all the other parents who can't be in a subsidized situation? So I worry about that. And that's, you know, predominantly where parents have their children.
Yeah, and it is actually one of the things that Christine talked about a lot in the show is, I think one of the upsides of the pandemic was, you know, we're looking into Christine's home, and mm-hmm. yeah. we could see that with CEOs of companies, CHROs of companies, children are passing by.
Yeah.
What you've been really intentional about got forced through the process. So the good thing is that a lot of employers suddenly said, okay, this is integrating in a way forcefully that forces the discussion to say, how do we support these families? And I'm very encouraged by the fact for the first time in the US that the government's actually playing a much more thoughtful role, if not a, you know,
and fully also thought Priya, out. This is one of the few issues that's got getting bipartisan support.
Correct.
You know, I think society as a whole has awakened to see how important this is.
Thank you, Roger and Linda, for being on the work-life equation. I feel like I have a lot of takeaways, but the biggest takeaway is, Roger, something about the way that when you were just answering some of the questions that you always gave the perspective as an entrepreneur, but then also as a dad. And I feel like that is such a beautiful balance. You never stop saying, well, this is what it was like for me to grow the company, but also I was growing as a dad at the same time. So I aspire to be like that as a working parent. Thank you.
Hmm. Well, thank you for saying that. I was blessed to have an amazing father. And I feel like as I grow older, I try to be more like him. He was unconditionally loving. I don't ever remember him like cajoling me or pushing me. He just had a lot of confidence and faith in me. And as I've grown up, I realize that I'm very blessed to have had that. And so it's a wonderful role model of who I want to become. And I have to say, it's a journey. I'm not sure I was always, you know, the father I wanted to be, but I think I've grown more patient and maybe gained a little wisdom along the way.
So. Raj has been a great dad all along. Absolutely.
I've had my moments.
Well,
we all have our moments.
Yeah.
We have to forgive ourselves. We're not the perfect parent.
Yeah.
And for me, I think more than anything else, you both have such an incredibly calming presence. Mm. I'm walking away from this saying I will not beat myself up when I get it wrong with the boys. I've always said that children turn out okay in spite of us, not necessarily all the time because of us.
Yeah.
But it was just, for me, I'm going to go try and have a think about, you know, how we actually spread the impact of this. The reason why I joined Bright Horizons was to say, how do we impact every family like they were an individual, but how can we do it at scale? So thank you for founding Bright Horizons. Thank you for setting this up. And we're really, really grateful to have you on the show.
Well, thank you for what you're doing. I think this podcast is so great and important.
We could have used something like this.
Yeah.
The final advice I would give to parents of young children is a quote from Bob Marley. We used to play this song as we commuted to childcare, which is, every little thing's going to be all right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Priya, what resources does Bright Horizons have to accompany this episode?
This is one of those episodes where you will not get the pearls of wisdom from the show on the website, but tons of resources for working parents on www.bright horizons.
I have one book I could recommend.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, please.
My book, The Working Mother's Guide to Life. Mm-hmm. So there might be a few copies left on eBay or Amazon.
Okay, no, absolutely. I'm going to pick it up. But there are lots of resources on brighthorizons.com for working parents. We continually create these for parents as they navigate work, life, and everything in between. Bright Horizons is the world's most trusted education and care company. We partner with employers to provide exceptional early learning, family care, and workforce education that transforms lives and organizations. Because we believe education and care can change the world, one child, one family, one organization at a time. Are you looking for a job? Visit careers.brighthorizons.com, where you can join our talent community and receive the most up-to-date news and events at Bright Horizons. And don't forget to subscribe to Teach, Play, Love, our parenting podcast, where you'll get expert advice from our education team and learn what really matters and what doesn't in your child's earliest years of learning, growth, and development. Follow us on our social media and stay up to date on company news, join live events, and see what's happening at our centers. Join us by following Bright Horizons on LinkedIn and at Bright Horizons on Instagram.
You've just listened to an episode of The Work-Life Equation with Christine Michelle Carter.
And I'm Priya Krishnan.
Until next time, guys, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.